From KALW San Francisco, it's Minds Over Matter, the Bay Area's favorite radio quiz show, heard every Sunday night from 7 to 8 o'clock on 91.7 FM in the Bay Area and all around the globe on KALW.org. Our expert panelists tonight, moderator Dane Rodriguez and Ecole Bilang teacher Paula Teichman, are here to take your calls. So grab your pencils and paper, sharpen your brains, and get ready to call in and try to stump the panel with your questions and to answer theirs. The call-in number is 415-841-4134. And now your host and moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. We hope you had a lovely weekend and can give us an hour of your time tonight, because Minds Over Matter is, was, and always will be an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, we encourage your participation out there. We need you to call in with a question or answer. Well, at least to answer our questions at first, and then if you have a question of your own, that's great, too. The number is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. Our lines are totally open right now. It's a great time to call in. Please do that as soon as you can. Sometimes it does get a little bit crowded at the end of the show, so just give us a call, 415-841-4134. It's just two of us here tonight, so we'll have more time to take your calls. And as I said, give us a call as soon as you can. Our email address is mindsovermatter. Again, that is mindsovermatter, one word, at yahoo.com. Mindsovermatter at yahoo.com. And if you'd like to hear our show online, you can do that anywhere in the world at kalw.org. That's kalw.org. And if you'd like a podcast of the show, it should be available afterwards, along with some of our older shows, at kalw.org. Some old and new news. Of course, we are having the party to celebrate the Minds Over Matter's 20th anniversary. That will be on August 18th. I want to remind you once more, August 18th at 4:30 here at the station. Now, what I need you to do, and this is the last time I'll be telling you, because we do have to sort of figure out how many people are coming. We have to have a kind of a cutoff date. So please let us know by this Friday. If it's possible to do that, please do it. By this Friday, let us know if you can make it to the party on August 18th. What I need you to do is just send me an email at mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. That's mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. Send me an email by Friday and let me know if you are going to attend, and I will give you all the details or whatever few details I have at that time. So we will have some food for you, and we'll be able to meet all our listeners. And if you'd like to bring a trivia question with you, we will try to ask a few of those to our audience. So again, that's August 18th at 4:30. Let me know as soon as you can by Friday if you are going to attend. All right. Thank you very much on that. We do have a lot of interest so far, and we hope you will be included in that as well. So we're going to start with a round of introductions, then a round of questions. Although Pauline doesn't share the new prince's initials, by George, she's still quite the gal.
Okay, thank you. Our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, does his sexting the old-fashioned way, in person.
So that is us. I'll begin the questioning with Pauline Teichman.
Okay. Harold J. Smith is the birth name of which actor whose better-known screen name is derived from his nickname as a lacrosse player?
Is this a current person?
No.
A lacrosse player?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Very well-known actor, though.
But not a current actor?
No.
Okay. In the movies?
In the movies.
Harold J. Smith. Lacrosse. See, I'm not in...
No, I'm glad you don't know that, because I expected you to know it right off the bat.
Yeah, well, I can't think of actors who played lacrosse right offhand.
He didn't play lacrosse on screen.
No, I realize that, but you know, okay. All right. Why don't you read that once more?
Okay. Harold J. Smith is the birth name of which actor whose better known screen name is derived from his nickname as a lacrosse player?
Okay. All right. So I'll give you two questions here. In the majority of states, and by the majority, it's 37, who is the highest paid individual public employee? In other words, what does this person do? In the majority of U.S. states, and that would be about 37, Who is the highest paid individual public employee? What does this person do?
So it's obviously not the governor, because that would be two. Oh, let's say governor.
No.
No.
So once more, in 37 of the 50 U.S. states, what individual is the highest paid public employee? And what does that person do? I'm not asking for the name of the individual. Right. I'm just the what that person does. Second question. The 1830 novel Paul Clifford, that's the name of the novel. The 1830 novel Paul Clifford is basically unread today. But it has one of the most famous opening lines in all literature. What was it? The 1830 novel, Paul Clifford, is basically unread today, but it has one of the most famous opening lines in all literature.
It's that contest line. It's the worst line ever that they have a contest every year. Something about Dark Knight.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. It was a dark and stormy night.
Thank you.
Very good. All right. I'll give you one more then. What is the most populous landlocked country in the world? What is the most populous landlocked country in the world? So keep that in mind.
So.
You want to take a guess on that?
It's an African country.
Yeah, all right.
I know. I'm
while
trying,
you're
trying to
divining
see
shapes. There you go.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Oh, this is Melody from Berkeley.
Hi, Melody.
And I'm calling with a question that relates to the fact that there is a tent set up in front of our 1914 post office to keep us from being sold. So my question is, there was a book written called The Postman. I want to know who wrote the book, and then I also want to know who played the main part in the movie that was based on that book.
Hmm. When you say the postman, I...
Not Il Postino, right?
Not...
Il Postino, the Italian film?
Is it
Italian
book?
No, it's not the Italian film.
Okay.
It's an American film based on a book called The Postman. I know.
So are you thinking about the one with Kevin Costner?
Yeah, but who wrote the book?
Who wrote the book?
Okay.
I don't know. Is this somebody who specialized in basically science fiction? Huh.
I'll give you that much.
All right. Is it Harlan Ellison or Ray Bradbury?
No.
Okay. I'm just guessing because I don't know science fiction as well as others. So I don't know.
So do you want me to put it out or tell you now or just put it out for someone?
No, put it out for somebody else.
All right, you can put it out. So just repeat the question for everybody.
There was a book written called The Postman, mm-hmm. and I want to know who wrote the book.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Gary from Union City.
Hello.
A couple of musical questions.
Okay.
What soul group that featured five brothers had their own record label?
A soul group that featured five brothers.
Had their own record label.
Is this 60s?
It's late 50s, early 60s, but they're mostly just hit. Their hits mostly in the 70s.
The OJs?
No.
Not Temptations.
No.
Can you give us one of their hits?
Well, he did that to record for Motown at one time. They did have one hit called "This Old Heart of Mine."
And there were a lot of groups, and there were five brothers. Yeah. No, I don't know. I'm sorry.
The Isley Brothers.
Oh well, that makes
sense.
Yeah,
they have their own label, Teaneck Records.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And here's my other question. Who are the only Filipino brothers to have a number one single?
Filipino brothers?
Yeah.
How many were there?
Two.
Two.
It was instrumental.
Oh.
What decade was it in?
Late 50s.
Late 50s, instrumental. Filipino brothers. I'm not doing very well tonight, am I? No, I'm afraid I don't know.
Santo and Johnny, Sleepwalk.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry we didn't do better. Thanks, Gary.
Yeah.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
How are you?
Good, good. The only person I can think of that, I don't know if I have the name right, but is an incoming president for the question about who makes the most money in the 37 states, public employee, would that be, is the new person coming in or the person coming out?
Well, I'm looking for the job. You were thinking the incoming president? Is that what you were thinking?
I'm thinking of UC system.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like the head of yes. University system, in other words.
Yes.
No, that is not it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Pauline, it's your turn.
Okay. Name the composer and the opera, which were the first opera, American opera, ever performed at La Scala. So what was the opera and who wrote it?
The first American opera. Is there a date on there?
Probably, but I...
Well, can you give us, like, some way, I mean, how, like...
Well, American opera, so it's going to be what?
Well... La Scala. Was it in the second half of the 20th century?
Somewhere.
After 1950?
I'm not sure. Possibly right around that period.
So it wasn't, but it was a distinctly American composer.
Yes.
Is it something like The Ballad of Baby Doe?
No. It's a very, very well-known opera.
But it's an American opera.
American opera.
And it's from a composer who has an American name and is recognized as an American composer.
Very well known.
Huh. Is it John Adams by any chance?
No.
All right. I have to think about that, I suppose. Why don't you repeat the question?
Okay. Name the composer and the opera, which was the first American opera ever performed at La Scala.
Scala. And it could be in the second half of the 20th century. All right. And let's go to a call.
I don't have the exact date, but I'm...
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, yeah, is that me?
It is you.
Yeah, this is David in Oakland.
Hi, David.
Hi, I got a couple of answers. The landlocked country, largest one, if you're looking for population...
Population.
Mm-hmm. It's Ethiopia?
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh.
Right. Very good.
And the other one... the highest paid it's got to be football coach of the state's largest university.
You're right. Yeah, wow. I just have sports coach, but it's presumably football. Yes.
Right, right.
How sad.
And I have a question for you.
Okay.
What two people appeared in the most Hollywood movies, and by that I'm defining at least an hour long, together?
What two people appeared in the most Hollywood movies together?
Correct.
How about Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers?
No.
No.
Okay.
If I told you the number, I mean, the number's pretty astounding. And again, I'm defining a movie as being at least an hour long.
So Laurel and Oliver Hardy.
No, most of theirs were short.
An hour long.
Okay.
So can you give us a in terms of a span of years, by any chance?
Yeah, from the 40s through the early 60s.
60s, 70s.
Are you counting cameo appearances?
These are mostly not cameo appearances. Maybe two or three of the movies are cameo appearances.
All right. So, for instance, if I say, like, Bing Crosby and Bob Hope.
Well, they're not stars at that level. But no, these people were actually the sort of more or less the leads of their movies that they were in. And co-leads kind of of an ensemble group, so.
And from the 40s to the 60s.
I know for a fact you're not big fans of their work. It's been discussed in the last couple of months on the show.
So it's not... Okay, let's see about that then. You like a Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin sort of thing?
Think of that and then step down a couple of notches.
Okay. Gosh, can you do that? let's see. Step down a couple of notches. So are they a comedy...
Primarily, though, they started off in some dramas. They started off as sort of background characters in some dramas, and then they became leads in more of what were comedies.
Huh. Interesting. Okay, 40s through the 60s.
I'll tell you, if it helps you, 68 movies they appeared in together.
68 movies. But they were leads and also supporting.
They started out as supporting. They became more or less the leads. Yeah. If I give you who they appeared first with, I think you'll get it immediately, more or less.
Well, you could give me the title of one of the movies.
I'll give it away for you in a second. But
right.
I'll tell you this: they appeared originally with Humphrey Bogart as the lead.
Oh.
They appeared originally with Humphrey Bogart as the lead. But they could be seen as a team, sort of. I mean, like, they...
It's not just two of them, but they are thought of as... They're the two sort of most known of their ensemble.
God, this is embarrassing that I'm not getting this. You better give me the name of one of the movies.
Oh, my God. The Bogart movie. Oh, my God. 1940... This is killing me. I'm sorry, I can't recall the Bogart movies. I give you the name of any of their executive movies they starred in.
Okay.
But they were part of an ensemble cast of a group of kids.
So an ensemble cast that acted together a great deal.
Ensemble cast, and it started out...
40s to 60.
First was a Humphrey Bogart movie.
They broke off onto their own and made a number of movies, a huge number of movies on their own, sort of like part of an ensemble group. But these two are the lead guys.
I'm sorry, I'm not getting it. I don't know.
Neil Gorsing and Hunt Hall.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I agree. They were an incredible amount of movies together. Yeah.
And definitely a set down for me and Martin Lewis.
The Bowery Boys. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't do better with that.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And, I think it's my turn here.
Yes.
All right. What are the three earliest Newbery Award-winning books to become feature films?
To become feature films.
That's right. What are the Newbery? Why don't you explain what the Newbery is?
So the Newbery Award is an American award for best American children's literature.
Right.
And it's been around for a little over 100 years.
Since 1922. What are the three earliest Newbery Award-winning books to become feature films?
How about Shiloh?
No. I mean, when I say the earliest, I mean the earliest winners of the Newbery Award to later become feature films.
Right. I'm trying to think of early ones that became film. I may not know. Because I know a lot of them more recent, like Bridge to Terabithia and all that.
Right.
Early ones.
So, what are the three earliest Newbery Award-winning children's books to become feature films? Under the same title, I may add. So,
I'm trying to see the list because I have the list every year for my students because we do a project based on Newbery books.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm visualizing the list.
And the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134. Again, this is Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. at 415-841-4134. And our panel tonight is teacher and photographer Pauline Teichman. I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez, and you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That's KALW, your local public radio station. Yes?
May I ask if the films were also quite a while ago, or is it perhaps books that were early on but that were made into films much later?
The films were a ways after the books first came out. So, but nothing within the last 20 years or something, so... Keep that in mind. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Oh, hi. I wanted to know, throughout the history of the Oscars, what is the highest number of categories that any individual has ever been nominated in?
Like a single individual in different
categories? A single individual over the course of that individual's career has been nominated for the most categories for winning an Oscar.
I would think four.
Not necessarily winning them, but just nominated.
Right.
Four or five maximum.
Five is correct. And there's one person.
Okay.
All right.
So obviously director, actor.
Screenwriter.
Screenwriter.
Well, they could be technical awards.
Producer, yes. They could be technical awards. You're right about that. How many? Is there a number you want to, that we could fill in? Or you want to know the number?
No, I want to know the person. Person who's been nominated five different categories for an Oscar.
Okay.
And so, it's a famous person. So it's evidently, yes, one of those people you first mentioned.
Is it either Olivier or Orson Welles?
No, but a similar type of person in similar types of films, although in a later period.
Like a Kenneth Branagh, maybe?
That's who it is. Can you name the five categories?
Okay. Ooh, well, screenwriting, probably, or at least adaption, possibly.
Yeah, screenplay.
Director.
Yes.
He might have been nominated for Best Actor.
Yes.
And Richard, or...
Producer?
Whatever. No.
Okay. Did he write any music for the movie?
No.
Well, you got actor. What goes along with actor?
Best supporting actor?
Supporting actor.
That's right.
Okay. So, actor, supporting actor, director.
Actor, supporting, director, screenwriter.
He directed a short live film that was nominated.
Oh, okay.
Oh, best short film.
A short film. It was called something called Swan Song.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
What and can you tell me the different awards that Cyndi Lauper has won in her career? Major awards?
She just won the Tony Award.
That's right.
For best score.
Boots. For
Kinky Boots.
Kinky Boots.
Yeah.
And she must have won a Grammy. Yeah.
No.
Oh, she never won a Grammy.
She's got a Tony and an Emmy.
An Emmy?
I said Emmy.
Oh, an Emmy. Oh. I didn't know that.
Go.
She was a guest star in several episodes for a comedy in the 90s.
That's right.
Oh. Yeah. I do remember that.
Set in New York.
Friends?
Mad About You.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, she was Ira's girlfriend and I think ex-wife, sometime wife.
Oh, all right.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
All right.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, it's Michael from El Cerrito.
Hi, Michael.
Great voice.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to take a stab at the highest paid state employee in 37 states.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be the coach of the university football team?
It would be. It would be. Somebody got it just before you, but you're right. You're right. There you go.
Oh, great. How about these Newbery Award winners? Would Red Badge of Courage be one?
That didn't win the Newbery Award.
No.
How about the Red Pony?
Oh, the Red Pony's a good one.
That did not win the Newbery Award either.
Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm?
Nope, not that either.
That didn't win a Newbery for sure.
Bambi?
Nope.
Didn't win.
That's all I have.
All right. Thanks a lot, though.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. Hope you're enjoying the show. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. We are an audience participation quiz program. So if you'd like to call and participate, that number is area code 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Yes, Pauline?
Didn't one of the Little House on the Prairie books win Newbery?
I'm not saying it couldn't have, but it's just not one of the earliest.
It wasn't one of the first ones.
No,
okay.
No. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Janosz in the 54-degree out of Richmond. How wonderful.
Janosz.
The answer to the La Scala question is Bernstein's A Quiet Place. Yes?
That's not what I have. But
A Quiet Place premiered at the La Scala in the 80s, so if you think there is one before...
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Definitely before that.
And I have an open-ended opera question.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. During the recent Gospel of Mary Magdalene at the San Francisco Opera, I was making a list of operas with a religious theme, a religious subject. And when I reached 50, I stopped. But I just wonder if people can sort of add to the list that includes such works as Parsifal and Salome, Samson and Delilah, Saint Francois, Satyagraha, etc. If open-ended questions out loud.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll leave it out for you.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
Thanks, Josh.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And Pauline, I think it's your turn.
Okay. And Ashley, this would have been perfect for Yanish. Who took photo 51 and what was its importance?
Who took photo 51?
It's called photo 51. That's the name it's known by. It's a famous photo, had very significant effects historically. And actually, the person who took it is not the one who's most associated with it.
It's nothing to do with Area 51.
I don't know what that is.
Where it's supposedly the aliens have landed.
No, nothing alien.
All right. Photo 51. Mm-hmm. And you think Janosch would have done
that? I definitely think he would have known.
So is it something to do with opera?
No. But he knows a lot of science.
Oh. Is he? Okay. photo 51. Photo 51. So is it something to do with discovering an element or?
Not an element, no.
All right.
Very important discovery.
Nothing to do with radium, for instance, or anything like that. Okay. All right. Well, repeat the question, please.
Okay. Who took photo 51 and what is the importance of photo 51?
Photo 51. All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Andrew in Oakland.
Hi, Andrew.
I don't know who took the photo 51, but wasn't it an image of DNA?
Absolutely, yes.
Oh.
It's an X-ray diffraction photo of DNA, absolutely.
And,
but the poor person who took it gets very little credit.
Oh, so it was the woman, wasn't it? Whose name I can't remember.
Yes.
It wasn't Watson or Crick.
Exactly.
Okay, yes.
I'll give the name since you've got everything else. Rosalind Franklin.
All right. There we go. I couldn't have done it without you. Thank you very much.
And the first American opera at La Scala, that must have been Porgy and Bess.
Absolutely.
Oh, excellent.
Yes.
Good job.
And I wonder if I might indulge you in, like, a few questions about Pulitzer Prizes in music.
You can try. I don't know how indulged I'll be, but we'll try.
Okay. One is, who is the first Pulitzer Prize winner in music? Another was what is the only film score? The first woman, the first African-American, the first jazz composition, and the only three people to have won twice.
All right.
Wow.
I knew one of the Pulitzer Prizes for music, a guy named Gail Kubik. Let's see. All right. Go over the questions once more, please.
The first, 1943.
43. Is it like Roy Harris or Schumann? Walter Schumann?
William.
William Schumann,
William Schumann. Mm-hmm.
So it is William Schumann?
Yes.
Okay, so that's Symphony number 3, maybe?
No, it's called Secular Cantata number 2.
Okay.
A free song.
All right. And, what are the other questions?
You know the only film score that's...
How far back are we going?
1949.
Is it Copland?
No, but the genre, in that genre.
Hmm.
So, it's not Copland, it's 49. Is it Bernstein? No, it's not Bernstein.
No, somebody who did, he actually did three film scores. It's like probably his least famous, but there was the one that won the, is noted doing for the Farm Security Administration.
Hmm. Oh, like the plow that broke the plains kind of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't that won, but yeah.
Yes, I have a record of that too. Oh my. All right, I have to work on that. Keep going.
the first woman.
1983. Is this for a classical piece?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
1983. I don't think I'm going to get that.
Okay. Ellen Zwillich.
All right.
Like the first first African American and the first jazz piece, and those were came in just after each other. 1996 was the first African American, and 97 was the first jazz piece.
First jazz piece.
Like something by Marsalis?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Very good for you.
Yeah, okay. 1997, Wynton Marsalis. And there was a controversy about that because it's supposed to be received as either its first performance or its first recording in the year before. Mm-hmm. And turns out there was a revised, but very, very lightly revised version of it that came out in that year. So technically it wasn't really eligible. So there was a controversy about it. It was Blood on the Fields, the oratorio. Was the,
oh. I'm still thinking about trying to remember who wrote The Plow That Broke the Plains. Okay, you better fill in the rest of the blanks for us.
That's 1949, the only film score, Virgil Thompson.
All right.
Oh.
For Louisiana Story.
Mm-hmm.
And
I feel bad, I should have gotten that.
The first African American, 1996, I wouldn't have known this myself, I guess, George Walker.
Oh, okay.
Hmm.
And then three people who won it twice.
Three people won it twice.
You know, pretty famous names.
Three people won it twice. What would be the earliest that they won it?
48, 61, 58, 63, 60, 73.
Okay. So, Samuel Barber, one of them?
Yes.
All right.
For his opera, Vanessa, and for a piano concerto.
Okay. And the other, equally famous, would you say?
Yeah, there's two others.
Two others, I'm sorry.
Not quite as famous, but names that you would know.
Names I would know.
Somebody who died not long ago at a very old age.
Oh, like Walter Harrison, or
no?
And not Roy Harris, and not William Schumann, and no.
Okay, the one is Walter Piston.
Oh, all right.
And the other is Elliot Carter.
Okay, well, Elliot Carter being the one that died at a very old age.
Right. Yeah, okay. He was 100 and something.
Did you give the woman?
Ellen Zwillich.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7. We do hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to repeat the questions now that have not been answered. What do we have, Pauline?
I think the only thing I have is Harold J. Smith is the birth name of which actor whose better-known screen name is derived from his nickname as a lacrosse player. I'm pretty sure that's all that's still.
A well-known movie actor who is not around anymore.
No. Hasn't been for some time.
Okay. And what are the three earliest Newbery Award-winning children's books to become feature films? What are the three earliest Newbery Award-winning feature films, or excuse me, award-winning children's books to become feature films? And that's it. So that being said, I'll give you another question. All right. I have a list of people who you do not ordinarily think of as writing children's books. In other words, they're famous novelists. And I have a list of the children's books they wrote. So I'm going to give you 8. I'm sorry. I'm going to give you 8 children's books, and they're each written by a famous novelist or writer who is not associated with children's books ordinarily. Okay? Number 1, The Crows of Pear Blossom. The Crows of Pear Blossom. Number 2, The Cat and the Devil. Number 3, The Gnome Mobile, or Gnome, G-N-O-M-E, The Gnome Mobile. Number 4, The Three Astronauts.
Oh, I've seen that one.
Number 5, Little Man, comma, Little Man. Little Man, Little Man. Number 6, The World is Round. The World is Round. Number 7, The 13 Clocks. The 13 Clocks. And number 8, The Widow and the Parrot. The Widow and the Parrot. Now, once more, these are children's books that were written by adult author people. In other words, authors, famous authors who wrote generally adult fiction. So what I want you to do is tell me the names of those famous authors. Number 1, The Crows of Pear Blossom. Number 2, The Cat and the Devil. Number 3, The Gnome Mobile. Number 4, The Three Astronauts. Number 5, Little Man, Little Man. Number 6, The World is Round. Number 7, The 13 Clocks. And number 8, The Widow and the Parrot.
Okay, I haven't even heard of very many of these, but I'm going to take a stab at The Crows of Pear Blossom and say Louise Erdrich.
No.
How about Barbara Kingsolver?
No, it is not a woman.
It's not.
It is not a woman.
Huh.
It is a British author.
British?
Yeah. Originally, anyway. Hmm. He might have moved. I think he moved to America later. But
are these relatively older books or some contemporary?
Most
Three
of them,
Astronauts is pretty contemporary.
Most of them are older, but they're not old, old. In other words, they're probably all second half of the 20th century.
I can actually see the cover of that one, and I can't think of the name.
Oh.
And The 13 Clocks is the only other one I think I've heard of.
And the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, Bill from San Francisco.
Hi, Bill.
I think The 13 Clocks is a man, a cartoonist named Thurber, and if I recall correctly, his first name is James.
You're absolutely right. James Thurber. Very good.
Okay. I don't know any more of those. I had a couple of questions I wanted to ask.
All right, go ahead.
The first one for you and for any, for listeners, because I don't know the answer, is on a radio program called Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Who is the villain?
Didn't they have more than one villain? Jerry Nachman is not here, who is our radio expert. Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. It wasn't the Tiger Woman, because that was the
no,
other one.
He had two henchmen named Fang and Gardo. Oh. And he was, I can't remember him, but he was the most evil man that ever lived, because he would say things like, "A quick death is too good for you."
So this is a foreigner, then?
He had some kind of an accent which I am unable to identify. So, vaguely European, I would think.
Of course.
Europeans are always vague.
They're always the, yeah, slimy villains. All right, let's leave it out, and let's have somebody call
Gardo
in with the answer.
Turned against him and was turned over to the tender mercies of Fang.
All right, we'll leave it out for people.
Okay, and the other one is, how many capital cities can you name that are among the largest 10 cities in the United States?
Now, when you say the capitals, you mean state capitals?
State capitals.
Okay. Right. Largest cities in the United States. Indianapolis, one?
That's very close, but no.
And Boston?
No.
Oh. So they
how
have
about
to be
Annapolis?
They have to be the largest, not just the largest city in their state. They have to be some of the largest cities in the United States.
Among the 10 largest, yeah.
Okay.
Wow. So capital city.
So among the 10 largest. Let me think for a minute. Atlanta, Georgia.
No.
Oh.
But somewhere in Texas, whatever the capital of Texas is.
Atlanta's not one of the largest cities in the U.S.?
Actually, Austin is a very good guess, but it's the 11th largest.
Oh.
Atlanta really is not? Okay.
No.
How about, let's see.
All right, let's think now.
How about Salt Lake City?
No.
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 I'll give you a hint. It is not Montpelier, Vermont.
Okay.
Right.
It is not Jefferson City, Missouri.
So, but it's not Boston, you said, and it's not Indianapolis, and it's not Atlanta.
It's not Sacramento.
It's not Sacramento. It seems like it would be east of the Mississippi rather than west.
What about Washington State? Let's see.
No, that's Olympia. No. Columbus, Ohio.
No, but you're getting close. I mean, it's one... Columbus is one of the top 15, I would think.
And Boston is not in there, and Atlanta is not in there.
Boston is a big municipal area, but it's not even as big a city as San Francisco.
Okay. And like Tallahassee, Florida?
No.
Okay. How about Chicago?
No, it's not the state capital.
Not the state. Oh, see, I don't know the capitals.
And you said Columbus is close to another one, which is, it's not Illinois, and it's not...
Boston is very close. I think she guessed that.
It's not Baton Rouge.
No.
And...
Georgia.
I'm getting old, but it surprised me, so it will probably surprise you, too.
I'm already surprised. all right, what is it?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh,
that's a huge growth city.
It's the sixth largest city now in the United States.
Huh. Wow. Phoenix. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, my name is Barbara. I'm in Berkeley.
Hi.
I'd like to take a stab at the Newbery Award films.
Yes.
And Lassie Come Home?
No, not Lassie Come Home.
Black Beauty?
Nope.
Wait. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Nope.
Hi.
It has to be an American author for it to win, and that's that's a British author.
Oh, it's Roald Dahl, yeah.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much.
I don't think Lassie was on the list, even.
I don't think so either. And I don't think Black Beauty was.
How about Rascal?
No.
Mm-mm. It's a raccoon story.
And next call.
Hi, it's Robert and Karen in Bernal Heights.
Hello.
And Karen deserves a bell for 13 Clocks because it's her absolute favorite childhood book. And we have a very well-thumbed copy of it.
I was looking down the list when I was writing this question, and one of my favorite childhood books was on there, which was The 21 Balloons.
Oh.
Which is
also a great book.
That's also a Newbery winner.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was looking down the list of the Newbery Award winners. Okay. Yes, I'm sorry.
So I have a question for you all.
I hope it's something I can answer for once.
I hope so. So Charles Foley died earlier this month, and he was known for inventing a game that was called by its critics at the time it came out, Sex in a Box.
Oh, it was the...
Twister.
Twister, yeah.
You are right. See, Dana, you got one.
Well, she leapt in before me, so I don't know if I actually got it or not.
All right. Thanks, all.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
I got to be fast.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, yes. Ed, how are you?
Good.
Hello.
So for the man who called about Mary Magdalene, I have real affection to her, and I studied her a lot. Magdalene, her real name is Maryam of Magdala, which Magdala is a very common name, which means glory. So it is Magdala from the land of glory to God. Okay, but I have also a name question for you again. Who is Samuel Clemens?
Oh, Mark Twain.
Very good. That is very quick. Okay, it's two names. One in English that means death, a woman name. Literally, it means death, but it is a very common woman name in the United States and other countries.
I'm thinking like Martha or something.
No.
Because Muerte, I don't know.
No, right. No.
There was an actress named Theda Bara whose name meant death, supposedly. But
I'll give you the answer quickly because you don't have much time. Sheila.
Oh.
Sheila in Old English means death. Oh. Then one more name. A name that means light. Winonura is from Arabic and Hebrew. It means light,
like
but also is in all the English.
Lucy or Lucia, Lucia.
Very good. Perfect. Correct. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Pauline, I think it's your turn.
Okay. These four things are associated with what? Cups, swords, coins, and batons.
These four things?
The four taken together.
Once more.
Cups, swords, coins, and batons.
But you're looking for what?
Like what that association is, what together they were or represented.
Well, there's tarot cards.
Exactly. So those were the four
swords.
They were the four suits, the four initial suits.
All right. Oh, okay.
So follow up on that. So what do the four different suits represent in terms of societal divisions.
That's as far as I can go with tarot cards, because I've never had my fortune read with that.
Well, tarot, well, I mean, there's
I never
definitely...
wanted to know of my impending death.
Yeah.
All right. No, what do you want to know?
So they're set to represent divisions of society, the European design. So what represents what? If you're looking at the four suits as they are now today, okay, hearts, diamonds, etc., which one represents what?
All right. And let's go to a call.
Hi, this is Nancy from Berkeley.
Hi, Nancy.
And Aldous Huxley wrote The Crows of Pear Balsam.
You're absolutely right.
And it is a fantastic book.
Okay, I'm going to have to read it now.
Oh, God, it's just great. And they just came out with a new edition with beautiful colored photographs. I Ooh. Have the first editions, which is black and white.
What year did it come out?
A long time ago.
I believe that, but...
And another thing, when, what's his name? Ede was talking about names about life. Aviva is the...
Oh, Hebrew.
Hebrew. Yeah. And I missed the...
Actually, question. Aviva means spring also.
Oh, okay.
The season spring.
Yeah. I'm sorry, you missed what?
I missed the question about the Newbery, not the Newbery, but the movies that...
Okay, well, I'll read it for you here.
Okay.
What are the three earliest Newbery Award-winning children's books to become feature films?
Oh, Midnight in Jeremiah.
No.
That was in So Dear to My Heart.
Oh. Mm. But no, that's not it anyway.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks. Well, I have one possibility. Sorry, my phone was upside down. I have one possibility. The World is Round, I believe, is Gertrude Stein wrote that.
That is correct. Yes.
Yes, I have a copy. And thank you. And I wanted to add to the Rosalind Franklin because
yes.
It was her birthday this week, and Google
yes.
had a lovely little cartoon of her.
I know, that's why face. I thought of it.
Yeah, but I just wanted to say she was a crystallographer.
Yes, absolutely.
And they stole her. They broke into her office and stole it. I just, you know,
yes.
it's pretty slimy. Okay, and the other thing is, I have such a question for you. Dana, why
yes.
do you say adaption rather than adaptation? It drives
it's a great
me nuts
question.
Every time, and I haven't looked it up. I just asked you.
Do I have a reason for that? No, I probably don't. It's
okay.
Probably just laziness, actually.
Oh, well, yeah, that syllable, you know, it can be a lot. Okay, thanks a lot. Sunday night would not be the same without you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. The world's oldest bank, this was in the news last week. The world's oldest bank is in what European city?
Bern.
No. The world's oldest continuously in service bank is in what European city?
Or London.
It is not a capital city. The world's oldest bank continuously in use is in what European city? Right. And the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Is it me?
It is you.
Hi, it's Alec in San Francisco.
Hi, Alec.
I am pretty sure that I know the name of the recurring villain from Jack Armstrong.
Oh, good.
American
I'm glad.
Boy.
I'm glad.
I don't know it from the radio show, but I know it from the 40s comics, and I bet you it's the same guy.
From the back of the Wheaties box, maybe.
His name is Professor Proteus.
Oh, okay.
So he is, in fact, a sinister European gentleman who is obsessed with taking over the world.
Mm-hmm. Aren't
so
they
hope
all?
That helps.
Thank you.
So I have one question for you guys
yes.
this week, which is, what was most unusual about the 70s children's television show Lancelot Link?
Secret chimp?
Yeah, that's the part I left.
Now, all the parts were played by apes, or chimps. And I think there might have been other, there were apes in there as well. I mean, there were, but they were all of that
primates.
Simian
yeah,
variety.
Chimps. Yes. I only remembered chimps. But it's a show I was thinking about because apparently they treated the chimps really, really well. Yeah. Unlike on the Mr. Ed show where they made his mouth move by putting iron filings under his mouth.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
That's how they made Mr. Ed do that.
I did not know that.
He's trying to get out the filings, yeah. But they made the chimps move their mouths by giving them wads of sticky peanut butter.
Oh.
Which they are chewing and trying to clean off their teeth. So
yes. Lancelot Link, Secret Chimp. I don't think I watched it, but I was aware of it.
It was pretty good, and there's a very sought-after soundtrack album that's supposedly the chimps playing psychedelic rock.
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds of dollars, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, probably the best of the James Bond spoofs, in my opinion.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. Hope you're enjoying if you stumbled on us and are wondering what the heck this is. We are here every Sunday at 7 p.m. and we are an audience participation quiz program, and we will be celebrating our 20th anniversary soon. So once more, just to remind you, if you are interested in attending our 20th anniversary, which is on August 18th, you need to let us know by the end of by Friday of this week, okay? By Friday of this week, and just email us at mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. That's mindsovermatter@yahoo.com, okay? All right, let's go to a call.
Hello?
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, my name is Nicholas from San Francisco. I have a question for you.
Yes.
From the movie The Hobbit, what riddle does Bilbo ask Gollum that saves his life?
From the movie The Hobbit. What does Bilbo ask? Okay. I must confess that I have not read The Hobbit. My brothers read it over and over and over again, but I did not. So I do not know the answer to this question.
Okay, you want to know the answer?
I do.
It is, what's in my pocket?
What's in
certainly
my pocket?
A question one hears a lot.
Thank you. I'm sorry we didn't do better with that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Great question.
Bye-bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, it's Zach in Obscura Loma.
Hi.
Hi. So, Newbery winners, maybe Old Yeller?
No.
Oh. That's a good one, though.
Sounder?
No.
Okay, so it's unclear to me whether you're going for the oldest books written or the oldest movies?
The oldest books, the oldest winners of the Newbery Award to later become feature films.
So then I'm thinking maybe Where the Wild Things Are?
No.
That's not that
okay. So deduction is as good as trivia, I think. So here's an odd man out question for you.
Okay.
So which one doesn't belong? Full, divorce, baseball, supreme, royal.
Wait a minute. Full, divorce, baseball, supreme, royal. And
that's
which?
Correct.
Full.
Okay. So baseball, because the other ones are court. Full court, divorce court, supreme court.
That's it. Good.
Very good.
Okay. So, what do these four have in common? Pounder, back, master, horse.
All right, once more. Pounder. Oh, yes. Very good. Very good. Our board op wanted to suggest quarter.
That's right.
Quarter, pounder, quarterback, quartermaster.
And then finally,
Eric,
what,
good job.
So you got court, quarter. What does today have in common with January 4th and May 20th?
What does today have in common with January 4th and May 20th? And, okay.
Oh, they're 1/4, so the month is 1/4 of the day.
You got it. Court, quarter, and quarter. Okay.
Very good.
Great night.
Thank you. Good job, boy.
Thank you.
Good job. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Ben calling from San Francisco. I have a couple of answers to try out here.
Okay.
The Cat and the Devil, that's James Joyce.
That is correct.
Good. And the world's oldest bank, is that in Siena, Italy?
It is in Siena, Italy. Very good.
All right, that's all for me.
All right, very good.
Great.
Yes, the world's oldest bank, and let me read you the name, is the Monte dei Paschi di Siena. Love my accent. at Monte de Paschi de Siena. That is the world's oldest continuously in operation operation bank. So there we go. And
can we say what year it goes back to?
I think it's the 15th century, I think. So let's see. We have a couple of lines open at area code 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Good evening. This is Richard from San Francisco.
Hi, Richard.
Hey, in your vein of cards and the decks of cards, queens, clubs, and all that stuff, what are the kings designated? They are, and the king of diamonds, clubs, and such, relate to kings of old.
Right. Is Alexander the Great one?
Alexander's in there. Which one?
That's tougher. It's easier for me just to guess on some of the kings. But
spades.
Okay, guess the kings.
Is Richard the Lionhearted one of them?
No.
All right, wait a minute now. I'm thinking. Not Henry VIII. At least I don't think Henry.
How about King James?
No. Yeah. Isn't there a biblical king in there as well?
Yes, there is.
Solomon.
Could be Solomon.
Or David.
David is correct.
King David, okay. All right, so we have David and Alexander.
Correct.
And are there any from the Middle Ages?
Yes, one.
Charlemagne?
Correct.
All right. You better fill in the... We're almost out of time, so you better fill in the last one.
You have one last one, which is Julius Caesar.
Okay.
And would you like to know the suits?
Yeah, go ahead, quickly.
Okay, Julius Caesar, diamond. Charlemagne, hearts. Alexander, clubs. David, spades.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Cool.
All right, one more call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Ray in Berkeley.
Hi, Ray.
I can fill in the names of the suits and those symbols used in the tarot.
Okay.
The swords, which became spades, are the nobility. The cups are the clergy. The wands, which became clubs, are peasants and working people. And the coins are the tradespeople and merchant class.
Oh.
So those were the medieval nobility, et cetera, that were associated with the various suits that became both playing cards and tarot cards.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate it. All right, okay, time to clean up. What do we got? Pauline?
The only thing I had out was Harold J. Smith is the birth name of Jay Silverheels.
Oh, okay. Oh. All right, what are the three earliest Newbery Award-winning children's books to become feature films? The Story of Mankind via Van Loon, Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, I should have known that.
And Johnny Tremaine.
Johnny Tremaine.
Jizzy made a film about Johnny Tremaine.
Yeah, I show that one to my class, actually, my fifth graders.
The famous writer, the famous novelists who are also wrote children's books, the ones nobody got, the Gnome Mobile is Upton Sinclair, Three Astronauts, Umberto Eco, Little Man, James Baldwin, and The Widow and the Parrot, that's Virginia Woolf.
Oh,
it's supposed to be her worst
that.
Book, by the way. If we did not get to your call, we do apologize. Please remember that Minds Over Matter is here every Sunday at 7. Once more, to remind you, if you want to go to our August 18th party, please let us know by Friday by emailing mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. Our thanks to Pauline Teichman for sitting in tonight. Thank you very much, Pauline. I've been your moderator, Daniel Rodriguez. Our thanks to Eric Jansen for handling the board and phones. And above all, our thanks to you for taking the time to tune in and call in. Have a great week. Please join us next Sunday at 7. Bye-bye.
If you don't spend, you bank. If it ain't B, it's Frank. It's gotta be this or that.
Minds Over Matter, heard every Sunday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KALW San Francisco 91.7 FM.
This is Joseph Pache of City Visions. Benefit corporations are changing what it means to be a socially responsible business. Next on our program, we'll explore what's different about B Corps and why they're growing in San Francisco and across the country. How are they combining profits with a concern for the environment? Join us for City Visions, Monday evening at 7, here on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco.